So thank you for coming out tonight to read. It is the summer solstice, so it's a nice way to start the summer. And so we're going to have Virginia Walker read first. I've known her for many years, and she's a delightful, delightful poet. She writes on a wide variety of subjects. I love her nature poetry, especially about Shelter Island. So, Virginia Walker.
Thank you, Tammy. And I'm not sure I brought a nature poem, but maybe something allied. And yes, I do live on Shelter Island, and I was very worried. I didn't know how many people you want to have here, and I thought, well, I make the ferry home, but we're starting early, so I'm sure I will, yes. This poem that I'm going to read was published in one of the humanist magazine publications. This one happened to be online, and the poem is a bit of a kind of a metaphysical, I guess, sequence and thinking about thought and the mind. And it's called Hiking the Ridges. From a distance, the late snow gleams in defiance of the warming climb. But when you approach, walking slowly on slippery rocks underfoot, you notice that the snow is an edifice sculpted by wind into pinnacles of ice strength standing in curious forms. Where are you standing? Is this not the mind? And you explore a world within of rock, an eternal planet of self. Your boots are now on air, and you still walk. For here, alone, you part nets of neurons, sealed to a scene of questing drama. Is your mind here, or are you the mind? Your arms move, your legs, you turn your head. You are a material spirit of many earths. Your mind inhabits all, every atom of desire. For you create yourself in every act, every thought. Choices hammer a contour. Your will inhabits decisions spelled in flesh. Your curious tabernacle is the unmelting self. And this was another poem published in the Humanist magazine. I was very pleased because Steven Pinker was on the cover. If you know Steven Pinker, the philosopher. So it was just great to be published when his... And it was the only poem in the whole magazine, so that was great. And there he was, someone I kind of read and like a great deal. Ritual. A lone turkey struts on our back porch, picking at droves of sunflower seed shells. For we have been solacing the persistent birds all winter, and now it is spring. The last frozen piles of plowed snow are shrunken, dirty reminders of cold. Through the window, I can see a cluster of green fans. The ground vines are awake. I realize that this day of portent, I believed, once when young and obedient, especially the clock at 3, I fasted in an aspiration of the sacrifice. But I questioned always. Now the world is as miraculous but pagan. I believe in the rise of green shoots from mold. I believe in the glory of my own existence. I know the absolutes of living, mortal and moral. A ritual of childhood compels me to dye ellipsoids, symbols of fertile life in beet juice, little sons in blood without the need for death. I do not slay the lone stalker to propitiate a god. But my old fixated belief in heaven has a new virulent cascade in the world. The new rituals are destructive of human life, of all mortals who do not bow to the one true faith. Now, you asked for a nature poem. Shall I finish up with something? Because I... Oh, I keep reading you. Well, you want a funny thing? You want an amusing poem? Okay. When I was teaching, I would go to conferences and deliver papers. And one of them was in Las Vegas, and I had never been to Las Vegas before. I will never go again. My impression of Las Vegas was not a good one. And I wrote this poem, which I thought was rather amusing. I remember it got in Bard's Annual, I think 2 years ago or something like that, 3 years ago. And so here it is. English teachers invade Vegas. Not a good match. I keep thinking of Gwendolyn Harleth as I pass the crowded tables on my way to my room. In myth, I know Yudhishthir, I'm hoping I'm saying that right, of the Mahabharata, perhaps the sleepless souls before the spindly bandits with garish signs have never read the great books. My room is at the end of a narrow hall with a mirror, but my reflection never appears ghostly before me. Then, as I see the long number, my wavy form pops. My room is a Japanese porn of mirrors and steel. Lifting curtain and blind, I find a jutting temple, obscuring all but reflective lights. I need to eat before I die. The walk back ends in a pricey burger overlooking bandits. A.M., I grab an ersatz bagel and lox, while walls of screens blink races worldwide and immobile shapes sit in rows. Marble slipperiness pursues my feet all the way to a lecture. Between the lecture hall and hotel are pools magnificent, yet uninviting in the chill daubed on a November desert. In a break, I confer with like kind. She speaks my words like a ventriloquist dummy dressed for English lit. Why would you come here if you're not interested in naked women? Where are they? Or expensive shows, that figure scratching at her pelvic bones on screens above the check-in? Or Toulouse in those cramped tables? Yes, where was the space in Bond films? Or to die? I have to agree with my alter ego, but she's much neater, her hair bunless and sleek, her manicure perfect pink. Another lecture, another hall run and lunch, famous gumbo. No one really sits, only perches, ready to run a chance. For some, the die is cast. They bring their own snacks and keep genuflecting while the tumblers run awry. For others that I meet on the bridge over the avenue, playing at poverty, even the stink of it, to get some coins until police sweep them away. High rollers must be way up on top, where the roller coaster screams between fake skyscrapers. At least the Thornton Wilder talk brings me back to ground in this town of forged lore. And I will conclude with a poem called Diagnosis. And some years ago, I had a bout with temporal arteritis. And you do not want to have a bout with temporal arteritis, because if it goes wrong, you can die of a number of nasty things. And I was treated for it with prednisone, which gave me diabetes. Isn't that nice? So I now have diabetes, but I got rid of the temporal arteritis. It seems sometimes you can't win. So this is a poem I wrote when I was struggling with the knowledge that I might have a death sentence hanging over me if we didn't have this temporal arteritis disappear, which, by the way, no one knows what triggers it. No one knows why it goes. No one knows exactly if the treatment is working, and they don't know if it'll ever come back. Isn't that nice? So anyway, diagnosis, slain by spears of grass, green light throbbing in the veins, stabbed by the fleur-de-lis of blue living but a day, run through by the moth wings luminescent in the dying sun, garroted by the brambles, their white flowers ascending, bloodied by pots of scarlet begonias, rain-blurred. Sudden death by giant cell, not the mystery I want, read I want. Which will it be, the trigger of my mortality? Ocular curtain, velvet falling, never to rise. Constrictor of rainbow scales, closing on my heart. Brain gutted by a flashing shovel overnight. Thank you. Thank you.
Before I was remiss in not thanking Tom Edmonds of the Southampton Historical Society and Penny Wright of the Southampton Rogers Memorial Library for sponsoring this little event. They gave us some wine and some snacks over there. So what I'd like to do now is invite this fellow that I've known for years, and no matter what I do, as crazy as it may be, he's like, I'll be there. And his name is Charles Peter Watson.
Thank you. This is my first time at the Halsey House. Actually, it's been the first time in the Southampton speaking. I'm pretty happy also to be here. I know that we bought books to sell, but my books never sell, so so I didn't. So I only brought the one for reading. I'm going to regale you with a little history. I think it was, if my math is right, it's 1,909 years ago. There was an eruption in Italy from Mount Vesuvius that you may remember. What you don't know is that the only city you ever hear of is Pompeii that was affected because they found so many bodies there. But other cities were decimated in the blast. But one city in particular called Herculaneum, which makes it unique because it's the only one of the, I think it's one of the, it's a Roman port city, but it's got a Greek name, which makes it kind of unique. And it was a very active seaport. They went, that's one of the cities that was destroyed by the, but when they went there, they only found a dozen people. And they thought, well, why, how come there was only 12 people there was, or more they found? But in Pompeii, they found like thousands. Well, how come? They thought maybe because people ran away because of the eruption. That is until they went down into the boathouses, and then they found another whole story. And this is the poem about them. Boathouse Bones. I could almost hear the screams as if these boathouse walls had my ears. Despite their peaceful repose, I could almost hear their fate roar without lament, resonating in this maritime mausoleum that was just as swiftly sealed. I could almost see the pumiced sea laden in swaths of these Plinian stone fruits dropped from the troposphere-tall stone pine tree. I could almost see the infernal breath, soiled with the skin of its vessel mount, raise tempest strides at cracked whip speed. I could almost feel the summer getting hotter until all the land was a magmatic plain, sealing fates of people and their place. I could almost feel the chaos that was the rumble, the crumble, and diastrophe raining and flooding this ancient port. I could almost taste the air and the heavy breaths of those who fled in the fear striking, only to be struck back with ashen indifference. I could almost taste the final harvests laying in stands and jars to no more sales, since the consumers are the harvest consumed. I could almost smell the once fresh air change its aroma with freshly scorched earth after shaking the very grounds it grew from. I could almost smell the fear in these masses beyond the once great city they left behind, only to be lesser remains of a much vaster ruins. But I could not have almost been there then, traveling this ever-growing road of time spans in just a brief jaunt so far ahead from this past. Yet to be there as I live and breathe, in these clean gulf air soothed boathouse vaults, among these artifacts that once lived and breathed, I could almost have been them had I been here, or with those who fled and never returned, where now lives that renewed fate that waits its turn. We're going to go even further back in history, in fact, even before prehistory, in fact, a few eons back, to a time in which the earth at one time was completely engulfed in a icy sheath. It was a time where one of the earliest supercontinents formed called Rodinia. And unfortunately, because of its position, it cut away a lot of the polar flow, the warm flow of water to the hot. So the temperatures dropped and temperatures just dropped with it, and the whole planet was just covered in ice, and it's been called Snowball Earth. Snowball Earth, Rodinia's tundra. Old man winter cradled you in his mild, thick, icy hands. As you laid, a continental lithosphere heaved you your age-old lands. Pole cut from water world warmth, your plate tectonic cratons swelled. Young sun lost its radiant hopes with gigannual beams repelled. Surface thickened to a tundral sheath wherein lied extinctions vast that killed off life and light despite your magma hemorrhage blast. Accrete, collide, subduce, and split. Your facelifts as ere as old as you. No matter what you quaked to serve a subcontinental brew. You were Columbia before Rodinia, and Pangaea you would be, giving and taking back your open face in a constant orogeny. Sediments of ice albedo feedback, dropstone din from latitudes shifted, what carbon 12 or 13 isotopes peruse from eons old magma lifted. Carbonated caps, banded iron formations, hydrologic geochemical rounds, CO2 constant beneath each great opacity, glacial striates mark your ground. What timeless deep freeze duration, a blip of eternal deep time's run. Land and ice shall bear scar-strewn wraths till tectonic engine fuel's gone. Also, in poetry, I also try to learn certain poetry styles. And one style of poetry, or form, I should say, from poetry, is called quartazine, which is like a sonnet. It's 14 lines, but it doesn't have a set rhyme scheme like a sonnet would be. So I have composed this quartazine called Quartazine of No Major Significance. A shooting star has a meteoric fall, as bright as the light at the end of the tunnel, but it performs its part in a shower when all the night sky is a stage. A single grain of sand is quite a measurement, simple and basic in the actual and metaphorical, with a power to humble while it amasses for what the most curious explorer seeks to find. The wish to travel back in time is always inherent in the hindsight of the regretful and the regretless. When they know now what they should have known then, and given that power, would get what they wish to learn. When given the world as it is and want it as it was, take it through to what it'll be, whatever you are. Now, I'm going to bring you to maybe a century ago. You might remember during World War II, there was a new chemical that was a paint that was made with radioactive material called radium. You probably heard of there was a plant in Orange, New Jersey called the Radium Paint Company, and they used to painted the clocks on the watch or the watches for the soldiers so they could see at night. Well, there's the tragic story of the women who worked in the plant there who apparently were misguided with what radium did because they just saw all the fun that it made their teeth glow in the dark because of the way they, because when you paint, the technique was to put it in your mouth to bring it to a fine point. I wouldn't do that now even with the safe acrylic paints. But this is their story too, and the title is based on a term coined by a journalist at the time for these women. Called Legion of the Doomed. All wars were all but ended after the one that just did raged in remembrance. Yet science safely bled orange-green from its home front trenches and benches, bringing undarked light through time in the darkest hours of a roaring road to ruin. But the shadow of death darkened back with a lickety twist of a jaw-dropping fate, going too far with a brush with death just to put too fine a point on it. This wasn't an art that imitated their lives, but a paint-by-numbers countdown to their ends. In a lapse of faith with delusions of glamour, they were given less than their 2 cents to lay upon each hour on every face of all time in all the days to come that would run out for them. The beauty shined by the light of their poisoned pens, dimming faster than half-lives working to their bones, until words stopped flowing by telltale muting loss, and the wages of capital vices were dulled. Paid in the lives of many and livelihoods of others by a radiance ever cruel, even in the right hands. They were the survivors who waved their false flags and fingers, yet faced the force that brought them their defeat in an insult to injury, so unlike the one they wrongly healed with. The victresses they healed lived to die a richer, irreparable coda, killed by their own hands with their quartermaster's ammo. The battle for survival raged for all the Legion until there was nothing but the light that burned on, turning them off. The field where the fallen facility was raised by a safer community built under safer regulations. And a more resounding no to this question I posed here. To end all wars, must the peace won come with any fatal price tag to those who earned angel wings from devils who pay them a rushing fool's wage? I found out there's a plant, it's a special species of jasmine whose common name is called poet's jasmine. And I took up a drabble, which is another poetic form of 100, you get 100 words. But I did it in a series of 5 quatrains. Poet's jasmine. Dulcifer with sweet salviform horns outstretched from its viny grips blooms all through the lattice, rising in bends and dips. Estival stars in perennial landscapes, complementary with an official name from its vetust dynastic grounds into occidental and worldwide acclaim. Many a literateur or blue stocking, love last or love lad con amour, penned of pursuits among jessamine and fruitful ends they bore. Not just coffee house writing tea with nerve-soothing Gizan repose, but a king of oils that rules beyond the nose. Let's phase this poet's jasmine, child of the olive family, that plays upon our senses and works magic upon maturity. Like it was a month ago, used to be like an old festive pagan holiday to celebrate the onset of spring. And this is based on a myth about the first dew of the May Day. That's supposed to harbor a lot of magical power if you harvest it early in the morning, when you had to get in the morning when it's fresh, because by day when it evaporated, like you lost your chances. Maya of the May Dew. From first dusk of a Beltane morn springs a newborn summer sweat on whiskers of an unshaven lawn in a rural sage set. When maidens trod their harvest, hazen pavinated skies will slow glow by sunlight to create, as will the world in their eyes. The Maya born of Paynim lore, that a promise deemed as truth, has soaked in May's dew's lucid core, give gifts of beauty and of youth. The vessel called the Holy Well is the site of meadow glow. This day casts by a festive spell in a subtle cerise flow. If captured or if baned good, all the straggler moisture fades, and cattle freed from boths now could graze new morn dampened blades. The rustic life load, manna writes, will transcend this daylight spry to glows of bonfire lights into the night fallen sky. With full days end upon all, the festive flames quelled to earth, hopes to yield that bountiful pall outweighs that of Maydew's worth. Thank you.
But we are in the Thomas Halsey homestead, and it was built in 1648. He was one of the founding families of Southampton. On the 275th anniversary of Southampton, I was asked to compose a poem, and part of the information I found out was that 8 men and 1 woman got into a boat and came over from Connecticut. And they named all the men, but they didn't name that one woman. So I was a little upset about that. But anyway, Halsey is a very old name, and it's just a lovely building, and the garden is just spectacular. My first poetry teacher was a fellow named Robert Long, who has since passed on. And so this one's entitled In, and it's for Robert Long. So this is supposed to be the great metaphor for the gotta-get-twofers that want the pain to stop like a shot of morphine, like a visit from Morpheus who brings dreams that become reality, even for a temporary time. A place where a red and golden dragonfly morphs into that perfect person with all the answers to all your questions. And suspended reality becomes that higher plane of existence, and only the most holy dwell. But still you stand there with your nose pressed against the window pane, unable to explain why. Why you can't find your way in. Into the maze through the haze of the days that have blinded your vision from seeing the path that the children trot down as they play hopscotch. All you do is stuff your hands into your pockets that are full of stuff that you protect, as if they were delicacies that you were able to take to the table and serve up as a part of the meal for the soul. But you know deep down that it's just another slice of what you gave up to be part of that scene that dances at the club to beat, that drives the grind and produces the sweat on the necks, the backs, and arms of the women and men who are searching. And you walk away spent, another day carved away from your Thanksgiving Day turkey of dreams, because you did not stand up for them. Those with no tongues or arms or legs, to those who wield the power without grace. So now you go home and lie down and watch TV and hope to blur out the images that define your mind. Or pick up a book that holds this poem and take a look, play hide and seek within the lines and finally think you know what it all means. But it's not here. It's in you. You are the poet, the Morpheus, the god of dreams. Spin that red and golden dragonfly into that perfect person. Turn her into a flaming redhead with flowing hair. Drape her in a dress of spun gold. Give her wings to fly you out and over the city. Look upon all that stirs below. Swoop down into the alleyways and doorways and subways and witness the pulse of the people. Remember and write. So I do have some form poetry in here. I'm not crazy about form poetry, but I will read. I'll read one out of what I wanted to read, but this is called entitled "The News for Today." The reporter announced on this morning's news how a 35-year-old woman was not murdered by her husband, boyfriend, lover, date. She was not stabbed or shot. She did not suffer any broken bones or black eyes, nor was she raped or threatened. The reporter announced on this afternoon's news how a 17-year-old girl was not slipped a date rape drug, was not photographed or videotaped. Her ordeal was not broadcast out over the internet. She was not lured by some boy in some chat room, nor has she gone missing from her home. The reporter announced on this evening's news how a 77-year-old woman who was not molested by the man who robbed her purse as she waited for the elevator. She wasn't robbed either. She got to go shopping and then went home and took a nap. Okay, so because it is the summer solstice, and I think this is one of my nature poems. I don't do nature a lot. Prose and abstract. Be my cowbell shaking blue, green raining, love wet. Be my coffee mug filled with shining smell. Take hold the buzzing words dripping from my ear. Finger touch my explaining smile, mow yesterday into today. Stay with me, my tree fort love. Wash piglets of sadness clean, making room for oranging leaves and burning dirt. Wrap us in spider webs and dew. Let the sun bear witness to our joining. Hold out your river hand, allowing silver fish entry. I will sway day long, singing the Hail Mary of love songs with my seaweed lungs. I don't know if that's nature. Okay, so I just passed my comps, so now I'm what they consider ABD. I'm not a doctor, but I'm almost. But anyhow, that's why nobody's seen me for a while. But I did get to complete this book, and I'm about to start the dissertation, which is The Healing Power of Poetry, Living with the Death of a Child. And some of you know I lost my eldest some time ago. But this is one of the poems I wrote for him. It's entitled Watching Ants. At first I wanted the whole world to burn, every creature in it, nothing left, no sea or poem. I didn't care about the boy next door kicking dandelions off his lawn, or the bamboo shoot poking up through the tar road to get to sunlight, or the ants toiling to get dirt out of their hill. I just wanted it all to be gone, never to return. How dare children laugh in the waves and mothers smile in delight? How dare cars stay in their lanes doing speed limits? I wanted to sink to Hades, taking everyone with me. No more breeze or starlight or linguine with white clam sauce or two bags of tea in a cup. Then, after time smoothed the jagged edges of my pain, I saw life in her perpetual way must continue. She didn't have the luxury of lying in bed day and night, not caring, not wanting. Now I stop and watch ants build, thinking how silly we all are, but the work must continue, doesn't it? So, thank you. I'll just read, this is a triolet. It's a triolet, but it's a triple triolet. A form, a season. When I cut a gardenia and pinned it to my blouse, I wore my heart on my sleeve. When I cut a gardenia, I walked in bare feet. There was you everywhere. When I cut a gardenia and pinned it to my blouse, the pale flower was in full bloom, and I was your fool, with my arms always open. The pale flower was in full bloom, and my friends warned me how you would walk on my words. The pale flower was in full bloom, and I was your fool. When the day closed its eyes, I was left alone with my pain. I went out into the dew-damp field. When the day closed its eyes, I searched for the star holding my answer, and I no longer spoke your name. When the day closed its eyes, I was left alone with my pain. So you could see how it weaves itself. So I'd like to end off on a happy, you know, you always try to leave them happy. Well, that's what they tell you. I don't know. These I call tamp coos because they're not really haikus. Breeze floats feather, serenity. Sleepy man, melon slice, quarter moon smiles at me. Rain on my roof, the heavens applauding. Squirrel sits on my lawn, relishing breakfast. Temporal, snowflake caught in a spider's web. Nine robins welcome me back to North Sea. White-tailed deer leave me three Montauk daisies. And for those of you that live out here, you know what I mean. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So, thank you. I promise next time I will be much more together. And I don't know Tom, but I know that he's a part of the workshop that I used to belong to over at the library, Rogers Memorial. How long you've been going to the workshop? Oh, wow. Okay. I was there. I don't know how many years ago. Yeah, ways back. Yeah. So, Tom, let's hear you.
Okay, thank you. I've never been to this Halsey House, and it's very, very interesting. It's bigger on the inside than on the outside. It's like Doctor Who's TARDIS, right? And although it has rough-hewn walls, you walk around, and you get a sense of the families that lived here, you know, which is a bit unusual. I mean, it doesn't have that museum-y feel. They've done a really good job. And we're less than a mile from the water. First one is called Lowest Tide. Slowly I walk on the wet shells, crunching, and on shiny stones, solid. I hear a seagull speaking to a clam, proclaiming dinner then beaking it upwards and breaking it below. My walk continues amid baby crabs, hurrying away from the unknown, from the heavy, destructive darkness across their newfound sky. I reach the end of the sandbar. Water abounds, lapping, beginning to gather again. The tide returns. My footsteps retreat. Okay. Also about the water, there is an effort here in part by Surf Riders Foundation, in part by Concerned Citizens of Montauk and other organizations to test the waters for enterococcus. And this poem is about that process, if you will. We need to know. Beach shoes, shorts. I go into the water of the bay, scoop a handful into a baggie, seal it. Back in my car, I fill out a form. Water temperature, air temperature, wind speed, direction. On to the pond next. Silt, not rocks and shells. Opaque, quiet. Another form. I drive with the samples to the university lab nearby. It gives us green. Can we swim with our kids safely? Yeah. And then about water, but this water is about 1,000 miles away in the center of the U.S., where a year and a half ago, big oil triumphed over clean water, although not without a fight. A tribute, a distant plain. Hundreds of teepees, drums, chants, prayers, no guns. Veterans, no guns. Cell phones, no guns. A younger woman with child on hip calls out the cops, the company, the guard. The water cannon in sub-zero against protectors, rubber bullets too close, a few townies bully, shopkeepers snarl, refuse service, hundreds are zip-tied. Soon the winter winds, the camp withers, crushed by bulldozers. The camp land is flat again, a hole in the heart, slowly healing. Yet the young women pray, exhort, lead, console. Seeds scatter. Now 8 new camps, from coasts to deserts. Teepees, drums, prayers. To stop the pipelines, stop the poisoning of our waters. To bring us to our better selves. Standing Rock. So, and I'd like to shift closer to home about indigenous. Okay, this one is called Legacy, and it's about a bar in Amagansett. It's called Legacy. Behind 2 old oak trees set back from the main street is an ancient bar with live music each night, country, folk, and rock. A bar named for the last Native American chief in these parts. He would have declined the honor of adorning the doorway to a place overflowing with bottles of the white man's slow poison, killer of his people. Yet he might nod his head in time to the beat, rhythmically move his arms and legs, dance, his body filling with newer gods, speaking through the words and notes of the rock and roll warrior guitarists and their shaman drummer. On a bit more upbeat, but still vaguely water related and okay, this one's called The Rainbow. I remember it now, a half century later. My sister and I were running along the sidewalk of windowed storefronts, leading our parents down the small village's thoroughfare, laughing and playing tag. I suddenly saw bright colors above a woman's head, swirling reds and greens to my laughter. She smiled, handed me her rainbow. Mother and father said, "No, thank you, ma'am." But she insisted it was a joy for her to give the umbrella to us. I had it a long time until a windy rainstorm sometime in late elementary school. Here I am with my own grandkids running ahead of me in this vacation town, brightly colored umbrellas on display to shelter heads with reds, oranges, yellows, and blues, just like that stranger long ago. Okay. And then I'd like to end with a poem in the Suffolk County Poetry Review called Sunset in Southampton. It's very short. Clear, pale blue all around. Field, flat, green, fallow. Tractor, long at rest, darkening. Above the trees, a wispy pink-white. A thin line of bright, the last of day, lingering. Okay, thank you.